All right, so this paper that I'm going to talk about, I worked with Matthew Matsganis and Anise Golden, who are at SUNY Albany. So I'll be talking about two different community-based projects, one that was primarily their project and one that was my project in Atlanta, that we've kind of compared and contrast our approaches and some of our findings. Matthew will actually be presenting, for any of you who are going to the National Communication Association Conference, he'll be presenting there some of the findings from the project, and here I'm going to be talking more about the actual approach that we took to the project. But if you want to know about some of our findings as well, I can talk about those a little bit later. So I don't have any disclosures to talk about. My project in Atlanta was funded by Health Resources and Services Administration at NIH, and their project was funded by the Center of the Elimination of Minority Health Disparities, also an NIH institute. All right, so we all know from health communication campaigns that when we go through the mass media, we often fail to address the structural variables that impede marginalized populations' ability to perform actual health behaviors. So we can tell everybody to our heart's content that they should be eating fresh fruits and vegetables, but if there's no fresh fruits and vegetables in their neighborhoods, we're not really helping them at all. And so because of this, we've started to kind of gear more towards these community-level type of interventions. And some of the research in the past has suggested that you're more successful in doing this if you do extensive formative research on the target audience to begin with, and then tailor to various subsets within the community that are important for your particular project. The less effective campaigns at the community level tend not to be theoretically grounded and or tend not to actually mobilize the community behind the efforts. So Nan earlier did a good job of setting up the theoretical grounding for this particular study, so I'll talk a little bit more about the communication infrastructure theory as it pertains to this study, since this is more grounded in us actually trying to do what she suggested at the end of her presentation, which is utilize the storytelling network in order to have an impact on health. So with the communication infrastructure theory, essentially there are two different elements in the communication infrastructure. You have the storytelling system, which when we're talking about neighborhoods, it's comprised of local and what we call geoethnic media. So those are the ones that are geared toward Hispanics or African Americans or people living in a specific community. Then the community organizations that are in the areas. In this model, we've also included the health providers since they are an important meso-level actor that is important for health communication as well. And then you have the residents themselves in their own social networks, tying with their friends and families. And so when you have all of these working together, your ability as a resident or as a community organization, et cetera, to connect to the other storytellers are influenced by the communication action context that can either enable or constrain your connections to other storytellers. So if you have a job that takes you outside of the community, it makes it much more difficult for you to interact with your local community organizations or with your local health providers. It could also be things like the safety of your community. So my community that I've been working with, you have the fact that people mention that there's stray dogs on the street that make it so that they don't necessarily walk around their neighborhood, which limits their ability to come in contact with other neighbors and talk about what they can do in their community to make things different and change things. All right, so our past research, and I can now add Nan's study to this one, but it's not on the slide, has found that when you have an integrated connection to the storytelling network, so you're talking to other residents about your neighborhood, you're connecting to those local ethnic media sources and to the local nonprofit and community organizations, we've found that there is an association between that integrated network, a positive association, and be more likely to perform emergency preparedness behaviors. This was during Alabama after Hurricane Ivan, I believe, with that one. Also seeking health information, having an increased knowledge of breast cancer and diabetes. Also having a increased perceived access of receiving medical care. Matthew Matsganis and I also did a study where we found for some people it was kind of the opposite of that, and that's because the Local Storytelling Network was doing a lot of stories about the closure of clinics, and therefore you perceived to not have as good of access as a result of the stories basically saying you're about to lose access. But in general, you tend to perceive having a greater ease of receiving medical care. And then also there's a greater amount of exercise for people that are more engaged in their community networks. So for the two studies that I'm going to talk about, both of them had an interest in trying to explore health access issues in communities. Research site one is my research site in Atlanta, and basically how we got involved in this particular project is that when we were doing community-based participatory research and having these big listening sessions, and people identified mental health as the number one thing that they wanted to take care of in their community, what also came out of those listening sessions is someone said, oh, I just call 911 when I have an emergency, and it was echoed throughout the room. And so when we looked into it a little bit further, what we found was that our community, which is NPUV, the one that is circled, the city of Atlanta broke down the city into neighborhood planning units in order to be more equitable in how they're putting resources and things like that. And so they each have a neighborhood association in charge of them. But NPUV was the second highest in rates of calls to 911 for non-emergency health reasons. NPUM, right above it, was the number one, and that's where the actual hospital is located and also where there's a high percentage of homeless people living. And what's interesting about that is that NPUV also has a federally qualified health center located right in the middle of it, and so people are not going there, they're calling 911 and going to the hospital. So six neighborhoods in South Atlanta, population about 16,000. They relied on the emergency health services for healthcare needs, and they experienced health disparities when we compare them to other communities in Atlanta related to diabetes, hypertension, all the things you would expect when you're dealing with a low-income, primarily African-American community with low levels of high school graduation. In upstate New York, the second research site is a small city in a rural county. When they started on this project, they thought that there would be a lot of things that would be different in a small city, and one of the interesting things we found by comparing is there are a lot of similarities in the types of barriers that two populations face, even though that one's in a large city and one's in a smaller city. But I'll talk about some of the ways that they're different here in a few minutes. So, small city in rural county of New York, the population is just 6,900, so much smaller city than even our small population within the greater Atlanta area. 25% of the city identified as African American, and specifically they were looking at females in this study because 8.4% of the women had been seen at the local reproductive health center identified as African-American, so you have a very small percentage utilizing the resources there for reproductive health. So the Atlanta study, we were looking primarily at primary health care access, and this one's looking primarily at women's health care access. All right, so the healthcare resources available to them, I mentioned that there was a federally qualified health center right smack dab in the middle of NPUV in Atlanta. There was also some other clinics close by. The public hospital is a quick bus ride away in comparison to apparently from certain parts in the community because the buses don't go directly to the health center. Even though it's physically closer, you can get to the hospital on a straight shot with a bus that says Grady Hospital versus having to actually get go to a train station, transfer and all that. So it could take them over an hour to get to the clinic in their actual neighborhood. Then they also have community-based organizations that provide some health stuff. So there is a women's reproductive health services at a community-based organization. There's mobile health screenings. There's health fairs in the community. In the small city in New York that we're calling Riverton right now, there's Women's Health Clinic, which was underutilized, a local hospital. There was also mobile health screenings, which reduced their frequency during the study, so they had fewer of them. There was a free clinic with only one day a week that had reproductive health services. All right, so we're trying to actually go out and use the Storytelling Network, since we found that the Storytelling Network is associated with more positive health outcomes. So the first thing that both projects try to do is figure out, okay, what organizations are available to them, and what are the local and ethnic media that they are actually using, and how do we do a better job of kind of connecting these different actors together in each of the communities. And so what both projects ended up doing is taking residents from within the communities and using them in different ways to try to make the connections that in some cases did not exist between the residents and the healthcare organizations, or between the residents and the media, or more likely between the media and the community-based organizations. And this is where one of the differences came up between the projects that I'll talk about in a few minutes, is that in the community in upstate New York, they didn't really have local media available to them, and so that it was a different strategy that they had to go with. All right, so peer health advocates in both communities did basically the outreach efforts. In NPUV, they were identifying neighbors with healthcare access difficulties, trying to enroll them in the healthcare services. They also helped us collect a lot of the data that we got from the projects. Very similar approach in New York. They led their weekly outreach efforts. They promoted and conducted health education and reproductive health screening events. And they served as a bridging agent between the residents and the community-based organizations. In Atlanta, we had them actually situated within the health, a federally qualified health center, so that they could help people enroll and they could go out into the community. One of the things that we found was that those that had the most healthcare access problems were not as engaged in the community, so even the peer advocates sometimes had troubles reaching them. And they also found that residents relied on their dense social networks in the case of the upstate New York community. All right, so how we went about trying to leverage the Storytelling Network and the community organizations is what we found in both areas is that the organizations were currently failing to reach the residents that they were trying to work with in our communities. And so our peer advocates worked as what we call interstitial actors, bridging connections between the residents and the organizations. And at the end of each study, they did a good job of connecting the residents to the community organizations, and there was much greater communication in this realm. In as far as the media goes, I alluded to earlier the fact that in the smaller city in upstate New York, they didn't have local media. They had media from the larger cities around them, so they didn't try to actually try to connect to those local media so much. They created their own local event flyers and things like that, whereas a lot of our efforts both worked with creating our own newsletter and our own flyers and things like that in Atlanta, but we were able to get some press coverage by the local stations that all the residents told us were the ones that they trusted most and communicated and listened to. One of the things we also tried is recognizing the role of the communication action context, because the people that are not as engaged in the Storytelling Network don't always have as good of health outcomes, we wanted to figure out, okay, how do we reach them then if they're not connected to the Storytelling Network? So we went through what we call communication hotspots and comfort zones. And in Atlanta, we were able to identify meeting and greeting places where people actually walked a lot, and then they'd go out and they'd find other residents that were related to a program and bring them in. And we set up little tents there, information tents. And in the meantime, however, there were not those communication hotspots in the smaller city. So they created a field office in a residential community that became a meeting and greeting location, but they also recognized that people in other parts of the community didn't really have access to that. So some of the lessons we learned is that you need to determine what role the Storytelling Network can play in the health communication interventions. Where are the missing and weak ties? When can we develop those? When does it not make sense to develop those? So in upstate New York, it doesn't make sense to go through the local media. How can how can the actors be used, community members be used to bridge those gaps for us? And finally, what stories are actually being told? So that's what Matthew's paper is going to concentrate on, is some of the stories that are being told in those communities, so that you can figure out, okay, we've identified some of these barriers, but now how do we help you overcome the barriers that you face to healthcare access? And then finally, how do we use the CAC for health reach? Are there current hotspots of communication, or do you need to create some of those where people feel comfortable meeting and greeting?